Here's a look at what's coming up this afternoon here on the Ideas Network. At 12:30 on Chapter a Day, Michelle Good reads from Paris in Love. Then join us from 1 till 3 for The Kathleen Dunn Show. After 1, a look at the growing threat of right-wing extremism in the U.S. After 2, Kathleen welcomes cast members of the traveling show Motown, the musical. And stay with us from 3 until 6 for Central Time.
Weekends on WPR are fun and informative.
Can you say nucleotide three times?
My head hurts.
Can you help me?
I feel flattered by, but I'm a little terrified by, too.
So whatever they did, I'm predicting, did nothing to the gas mileage.
Well, you know it didn't help, but otherwise...
they were very lucky.
Air wouldn't be going all the way from Germany, you moron.
You got it.
Listen on the weekends, right here on Wisconsin Public Radio. See the schedule at WPR.org.
Support for WPR comes from Hooper Corporation, supplying custom construction services, including electric power, mechanical, and green technology to commercial, industrial, and utility customers nationwide. Hooper Corporation, a Wisconsin company since 1913. Support also comes from Integrity Home Care Solutions, committed to offering a variety of in-home services tailored to meet individual needs and provide a maximum of choice and independence. More at IntegrityHomeCareSolutions.com.
If you've ever had an experience with someone who's had a stroke, you know it can have some lasting effects, and certainly some effects that will last a long, long time at the least. Today we're going to learn about a device that can reduce the symptoms or even reverse the symptoms of strokes as well as other brain injuries. Larry Mueller here, and great to have with us Mitch Taylor, who is a mechanical and biomedical engineer and scientist with over 20 years of experience in research and development, the use of visual and tactile displays for human-machine interfaces. So it's kind of an intriguing topic here, and some remarkable results, as I read about in Dr. Deutsch's book, The Brain's Way of Healing. Mitch Taylor, thank you so much. Or Tyler, excuse me. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today.
Well, thank you, Larry. I appreciate the invitation to follow after Dr. Deutsch's presentation.
Yeah. Transitioning here, how did you happen to get involved with his book?
Well, he first discovered us after hearing some of our early research, or learning about some of our early research when we were doing the sensory substitution, and that was the topic that was in the chapter in his first book. The title of the chapter was "A Woman Perpetually Falling," and it was our early entree into this this field of neurorehabilitation, and it was sufficiently provocative, as you can imagine, that we're fixing balance disorders, or what seemed to be fixing balance disorders, that it was pretty interesting to him, and he wanted to follow up on that. It was the first time we'd moved into this area of neurorehabilitation. So we were not just substituting for a lost sensory modality, but actually evolving into helping the brain return towards normal function. So not just substituting for one loss of sensory function, but actually helping the brain recover normal function, which was pretty provocative. It defies conventional wisdom in the classical training that most of us had as engineers and scientists. The brain is considered more or less hardwired once you reach adulthood, and Paul Baccarita, our mentor and the founder of the lab, really challenged those concepts and said, no, actually, with the right tools and the right training, it's possible to tease the brain to sort of reset itself, to activate these processes that are in there, but for whatever reason, a disease or a trauma, the brain loses that ability to adapt to its environment, to change, to become plastic, to continue to evolve, to meet the demands of the environment. And Dr. Deutsch mentioned, those epochs where the brain is evolving is usually when it's being challenged by its environment. And as a species, we're designed to do that, and that normally happens in a healthy functioning brain. For whatever reason, if it's a disease or it's a trauma, that process gets derailed. it's not gone necessarily, but it's derailed. It's not working properly, and so our technology seems to excite that process and to augment whatever therapy is being deployed with the stimulation to help the brain recover normal function.
Yeah. So what is the – so describe the PoNS, the Portable Neuromodulation Stimulator. Describe it for us.
Sure.
It's got a couple of main parts, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. So the main part – and this is the lab prototype right now. It is being developed into a commercial device that will be going through FDA clinical trials in the next year. The device looks like an Altoids box with a little tongue depressor sticking out of it right now. That's our research version of it. The controller provides a little train of electrical stimuli, tiny little electrical pulses to 143 electrodes that are placed on the tongue. And then you'd use that tongue as basically a pathway for these tiny little pulses to excite the brainstem and to then elicit these changes in brain function. So it's a fairly simple device from a hardware standpoint. It's a process that is most miraculous and a bit mystifying.
Well, it surely is. And who would have thunk it, so to speak, that the tongue would be the pathway to the brain?
That's a great observation, and we had the same sort of quizzical response to Paul Baccarita's idea. He came back from sabbatical in 1995 and had this notion that we could use the tongue as an interface to provide sensory information or information from one source of it could be an artificial sensor or another sensor to the brain. Our previous research had been using other body regions of the body, the fingertips, the forehead, all of which worked but have some limitations because the skin is a pretty good insulator and it prevents electrical stimulation from going across that. As a species, that's a good thing. So Paul reasoned that if we could bypass that, we can make the hardware simpler and then realized subsequently, and this was largely due to Yuri's intensive research, Yuri Danilov, he's our resident neurophysiologist, that the tongue is intimately connected with the brain. And then through the brainstem, it's one of our dominant sensors. It's the first thing that starts working as an infant. The first thing that you need to do to survive is the suckle reflex. And so the tongue and the mouth and the oral cavity are connected to our survival brain, our most fundamental functional processes. And from that, Paul reasoned that let's use this as a portal to pass information to the brain. None of us ever imagined that we would actually not just pass information from one modality, a camera or a sensor, external sensor, to the brain, but never even remotely imagining that we would actually rehabilitate the brain. Paul was a visionary kind of an entrepreneur, and even he had a hard time imagining that we could actually rehab the brain. Yet, here we are.
It's just unbelievable results. Gail in Fish Creek has a question for you, and so let's go to Gail. Thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. This is fascinating, being so involved in healing myself and with the work that I do. And I just thought I'd bring up what Edgar Cayce had said way back. One of his predictions was that we would be using electronic means and lasers for healing and doing incredible things. And this sounds like one of those amazing things that are coming, because we use the tongue so much. And when we're quiet, when that tongue isn't moving, we have better connection and peace in our electric field of our sensory field. And I think that this is this wonderful balance to be able to get in and start to unlock the point for people to get them to start healing some incredible things for themselves.
Oh. Comment, Mitch?
Yeah, you make a good observation there that what I late came to as far as an understanding was how much we are electric organisms. Our nervous systems are electrical conductors, and our whole function is regulated by electrical connection of signals from one point to another in the body and as a global process. So electricity is endogenous. It's innate to us. And what's been the big challenge for us as scientists and engineers is to figure out how to harness devices and external electricity to excite these normal processes that take place in the brain and to even help the brain recover normal processes when they're not working. So that's a very, very good observation.
And it is a good observation. We need to take a quick look at the news. Time is really flying. Mitch Taylor will be with us right till 12:30. Please stay with us. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here talking today with a device that was developed at the University of Wisconsin that can reset the brain in many, many positive ways. It's called the Portable Neuromodulation Stimulator, or PONS for short. And Mitchell Taylor, a mechanical and biomedical engineer, scientist, over 20 years experience in research and development of visual and tactile displays for human and machine interfaces, has worked on this in his laboratory along with many other folks as well for a long, long time. And they have some amazing results. So it's really a pleasure for me to be able to talk with him and to give to you what his team has done with this PONS machine. And I hope you'll join in with your own questions or comments as we move along today. They've worked on reversing symptoms of stroke, of Parkinson's disease, brain injuries. It has many, many uses. Call in at 1-800-642-1234, email at talk@wpr.org, or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. And Mitch Taylor, thanks again for taking time to be with us today.
My pleasure to join you, Larry.
The potentials for this device seem to be almost limitless, but I think it would be good for people to have an example. And there are several examples in Dr. Deutsch's book about people who have been helped. And I think sort of the Ron Hussman, the Broadway singer, is an example of a person who came to you who could was a singer who could barely speak and who had to use two canes. And he was a dancer, had been.
Yeah, Ron's story is rather unique, and it's a nice way to launch that chapter. He came to us because he had MS and had been progressing for some time, but he also had what's called spasmodic dysphonia. So, you know, the MS and the dysphonia had so much affected his speech that you're right. He had gone from being a famous and a well-recognized Broadway singer to barely being able to speak on the phone. And he wasn't really expecting anything to improve with his voice. He primarily wanted to be able to have greater mobility. But we thought, well, why not give this a try? And the thing that was probably most pronounced was his response to the stimulation was his voice control. None of us expected that, but in retrospect, one could anticipate that those sorts of things would take place. It's just it represents the limits of our understanding of the nervous system and what can be done. It is truly remarkable, and we have not really even scratched the surface of what's possible. We've limited our attention to traumatic brain injury, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's disease, and stroke, because those are largely physical sorts of processes. You know, they're physical ailments that the symptoms present, and that's where our basis was from. We've slowly been moving into understanding the effects of disease or trauma on cognitive function and emotional regulation. So we are exploring those as well in conjunction with the primary diseases or injuries. And we're continuing to discover new realms where we seem to have some influence or the ability to either slow down or stop the progression of the symptoms and return the brain towards normal function.
Yeah, and he, and it's the device itself fits in the mouth, but on the tongue or under the tongue? On the tongue.
It fits on the top of the tongue and the front third of the tongue. The front third is very, has a high representation on what's called the sensory cortex, on the part of your brain that picks up information from the body. It's second only to the overall representation of your hand, you know, your fingers. We touch things, you know, even as children, we're always exploring with our hands because it's such a rich sensory environment. The tongue is very similar to the hand in terms of its ability to pick up very subtle information. And the unique characteristic of the tongue is that it projects right into the brainstem, which is kind of the locus of our control processes for balance, gait, eye movement control. Process is called homeostatic regulation. So your blood pressure, pulse, respiration, gastrointestinal function. So we're sort of plugged into our most primitive survival brain, and we seem to be influencing those processes, and by extension, influencing higher level processes like emotional regulation, cognitive function. We're just now getting those regions, but the early results are rather tantalizing.
I would say that's an understatement. And Ron, this device in his mouth, I think you have 20-minute sessions?
Yes, that's a good point, and I appreciate you bringing that up. I just want to make sure that people fully understand that this is not a miracle cure. The stimulation is a complement to, and we believe it augments whatever therapeutic intervention is being deployed. And it seems to amplify and sustain whatever benefits that one would get from physical therapy or cognitive therapy or speech therapy in Ron's case. And the exercises themselves, typically functional deficit that you have, if it's a gait deficit or a balance or in Ron's case a speech problem, the stimulation is applied for 20 minutes. And it's not entirely magical, but our observations is that we need 20 minutes of stimulation along with the task performance to somehow get the brain to work differently and to start to reset itself and to work more like it ought to in a normal function. And then those benefits are sustained for anywhere from 2, 3, 4 hours beyond the initial training session. So the beauty of this is that it doesn't have to be applied chronically or, 24/7, you might say. Two or three therapeutic interventions in the course of the day will help treat the symptoms, and over time we've seen cumulative benefits so that people will progressively get better. If it's a stroke or traumatic brain injury, we're starting to move towards normal function. In the case of MS or Parkinson's disease, especially MS, it's a neurodegenerative disorder, we're seen to be slowing down the progression of symptoms. The conventional wisdom is you're going to get worse and eventually die. We seem to be able to stave off the onslaught of those symptoms.
It's absolutely amazing. And after, just to close out on Ron Hussman, he was here on the UW campus for 2 weeks, correct?
Right.
And at the end of that, what did he do?
Well, he went from being barely able to speak on the phone to building out Broadway tunes at a friend's home. He was originally from Wisconsin, the Rockford area, and he was at a friend's home, was able to sing quite well for the first time in 30 some odd years. So it had all of us tingling a little bit, and had more than a few people in tears. It was something you would never expect. We were as astonished as he was, and he was able to maintain for that benefit for quite a while, and then with some subsequent family issues, he wasn't able to maintain it. So the disease progressed, and he lost some of that function. It was clearly an indication that we could treat the symptoms and help his immune system and his nervous system start to behave itself, so to speak.
And you mentioned stroke earlier, and I also wanted to bring that out because the story about Mary Gaines, who had a stroke, and, you might describe, I mean, she was pretty incapacitated.
Yes, she was an unusual case for us because she did not have the typical symptoms of stroke that one imagines, with a loss of function of a limb, paresis on the one side of the body or another. Her motor functions and sensory functions were perfectly intact. She couldn't speak. She was unable to use the telephone to communicate, even in the most simple use of language, but also the cognitive processes. So for her, even being able to find the right words was a struggle. And then when she could find them, it took a long time. She would pronounce them very poorly, and it would be very frustrating for her. And she, because of this, is a very, very bright, very high-functioning individual, lost her ability to be involved in the world, and she's moved, went into a state of a pretty deep depression because of this inability to speak and to think and to be able to express her feelings and to function. She had been the head of a boarding school, and after the stroke, she was unable to perform her job, and it was very debilitating for her. The intervention was not unlike what we did with Ron Hussman, in that there was a lot of speech therapy and the stimulation and a lot of practicing both before and after the stimulation to wake up those neural circuits to get them to work more normally. And now, as Dr. Deutsch mentions in the book, to the untrained ear, she sounds like she has a slight Flemish accent. You would never know that she had had a massive stroke and was basically incapable of speaking other than just very simple words and gestures, and not able to carry a conversation. Her mood and her emotional process is also elevated, probably in association with feeling like she could communicate again, but also because she was able to express herself, she felt better, and it's a self-fulfilling process. If you feel better, you're going to do better, and vice versa. She also was able to find the right words, to maintain a dialogue, to use the telephone, to plan things. So we saw speech respond, but also her emotional regulation and her sense of well-being and her cognitive function all improved as well. Again, we had no idea what to expect with her, but it was an exploratory study, and we thought, what the heck? And it was all done under university research institution review board review, so it was clearly exploratory. She was the only one we treated in that condition. The rest of our patients and our subjects in our research were the more typical individuals you might expect to see with the symptoms of stroke.
Yeah, and you've brain damage, folks with brain damage you've worked with. I was really the story of Jerry Lake was. Who had brain damage and was incapacitated for so long, so many years, and then to have that turned around in a matter of a few days.
Yes, yes. Well, I want to use that as if a sort of a talking point, if I may.
Yeah.
The things that most quickly responded were her balance and gait. The things that she was most affected. Obviously, by was her walking and her balance capabilities were severely affected, and those responded very quickly to the initial 2-week intervention at twice a day intensive balance and gait and relaxation exercises. Things that took longer and are still progressing, even as many as 5 years later, 6 years later, cognitive function, emotional regulation, ability to be in busy environments, things like that, those were sort of hidden behind all the obvious physical symptoms. So as the physical symptoms resolved and she was able to get back to having a busy life again, she continued to work on the things that were less obvious but equally important, in that cognitive function and memory, attention, ability to plan things, to engage in conversation. Those processes continue to evolve. Again, if you were to speak with her now, you would not know that she'd had a pretty substantial brain injury and was on disability and completely incapacitated and depressed and had to live, in her home, pretty much isolated from society because lights and sound and stimuli were just overwhelming for her. She continues to work on her training right now and to recover. So my point is that it's not a miracle cure. It's something that, especially a brain injury, presents with multiple symptoms, and some things resolve very quickly, some take longer, and some we don't know what the time course is, how long before we come back to normal function. Some things respond very quickly, some take a little longer, and each individual presents with a different set.
Andy in Waukesha, thanks so much for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hi, this is Andy in Waukesha. Thank you very much for taking my call. My son suffered, unfortunately, his fourth concussion back in November. After his third concussion in 2008, it started headaches that were under control with just taking a couple of Advil or Tylenol. He'd have a few a month. Now, since November, though, he has a constant headache that has not gone away. So he wakes up with it. Everything makes it worse, and he goes to bed. We had to take him out of school, and he did homebound. And we've gone to dozens of doctors and tried more than a dozen medicines, and nothing has worked so far to take away the chronic headache from this concussion. Have you had any success with your device on this?
We have. You raise a good point. Sports concussion is quite prevalent, and it happens more frequently than most of us realize. The latest numbers that I'm aware of are that there are probably between 2 and 3 million new concussive injuries each year, especially in individuals in sports. And teens and adolescents seem to be more susceptible than adults for reasons we don't fully comprehend, but the brain is still developing and it seems to be a little bit more vulnerable to injury. We have dealt with a number of individuals who've had concussive injuries, you know, repeated injuries. The results are still preliminary, and we're in the middle of a sponsored study. The U.S. Army is sponsoring a traumatic brain injury study right now in our laboratory, primarily because the military has a significant problem on their hands with all these young soldiers coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan who have suffered concussive injuries of various sorts, and there's nothing that's really available. I will say that the study is ongoing right now, and we have a very pretty strict inclusion and exclusion criterion. So I can't say whether your son would qualify or not, but they'd have to be at least 18 years of age and a year past injury. But to the more important point is that we have seen improvements in the symptoms from either single injury or multiple injuries. With multiple injuries, they're usually more persistent on lower level symptoms that will take longer to recover. But we have seen, in Jerry's case, we found out after the fact that the injury that she reported that was most significant for her was actually the fifth or sixth concussion she'd had.
Oh.
And this was a revelation to us because, you know, we were kind of focused on the near-term event, but she had quite a history of concussions, and that contributed to some of the more latent, long-lasting symptoms she has. So the prognosis is good. We don't have a huge body of evidence on that, but it does seem to respond, and hopefully, if all goes well, the FDA clinical trials that are starting hopefully next month, in the next 12 to 18 months, the FDA will hopefully approve the technology for use in clinical environment, and then it'll be deployed in various clinics around the country.
That is wonderful. And, you know, the thing about this, I would expect fairly quick approval. There don't seem to be no side effects at all, are there?
No, there aren't. One of the key things about this is that we're not doing anything unusual to the brain except injecting tiny little spikes or electrical impulses in the brain that are not unlike the normal pattern of action potentials, little pulses that the brain uses to signal through the neurons. So what we apparently are doing is injecting these signals in there and exciting the brain to activate these latent networks that that are able to help the brain recover from injury. So we're returning the brain towards a normal function from whatever dysfunctional state it is. So that's why we don't see any adverse effects. We're not doing anything adverse to the brain. We're only encouraging it. At least our operant theory is that we're helping it return to its normal operating state.
And I think the interesting thing that there's some skepticism out there, in part because it seems effective over such a broad range of ailments.
And that skepticism is well founded. I mean, one has to be careful and not claim that this is a panacea, and that it's going to work for everything. We do know that depending on the severity of the injury, the prognosis for recovery is more limited, but there is still potential for recovery and function because if the brain is not working as well at its optimal state, then there's reason to believe that we can help it move towards a better performance state. The time course and the degree of progress is still yet to be determined. That's why we're doing the research in our lab. We have a study right now in advanced MS, for example, and another study we'll be starting in the next year in stroke, and our ongoing study in TBI, specifically to figure out how do the symptoms progress, or how do we address these symptoms, how many of them will respond, to what degree. It's still very much an open question, as we're in the trenches doing the basic research to figure out how far can this go, where can it go, what are the limitations.
We've had a number of people say, are you accepting volunteers for any of your clinical studies, and how might you apply?
I'm glad you asked that. We do have a website. Our laboratory has a website, and it's TCNL, so Tango Charlie November Lima, then BME, so it's TCNL.BME, biomedical engineering.wisc.edu. And on that website is an inquiries tab, and people can inquire whether they are eligible to be in a study. We have some FAQs, frequently asked questions on there, to help people determine whether they would even be qualified. And then we also have additional information in there about what the long-term plans are for the technology.
Mitch, this is wonderful. Thank you. I want to thank you so much. I hope you'll agree to come back and be with us again to talk about this further as time goes on.
I would be glad to. Thank you, Larry.
Oh, it's wonderful. Mitch Tyler, this is some of the great work that gets done at an institution, at this institution, the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I'm so pleased to be able to bring it to you. If you didn't go to our Facebook page. I think Cheyenne has a link to what he was just talking about in terms of looking further into the work that Mitch and his colleagues have done. It's just wonderful work, and I'm so pleased to be able to talk about it. And looking ahead, tomorrow's a Garden Talk program, talking with Christy Marsden from Extension. You stay with us.